I'm Katie Clark. This is The World. BP says it's making progress in the Gulf. The company says a relief well it's been drilling is now within 200 feet of the blown-out well that's been gushing oil into the Gulf for almost 2 months. That could take some of the pressure off the gushing well and off BP. This as the company's chairman claimed today that despite the disaster in the Gulf, the oil giant remains strong. Well, you wouldn't know it from the shellacking BP got this week on Capitol Hill. To discuss that and other top news stories of the week, we've invited Matthew Bishop, New York bureau chief for The Economist magazine, and Sherwin Bryce Peace, UN correspondent for the South African Broadcasting Corporation, to join us. First, Matthew Bishop, what does The Economist make of the pillorying of BP?
Well, you know, obviously BP has been responsible for a terrible environmental catastrophe and should be expected to pay for the damage that it's done. However, you know, we're a bit worried about the political nature of the response of the government, which has been really to force BP to pay money over and to make commitments that BP doesn't actually have any legal obligations to do in the way that the government is requiring it. And so we think there's a bit of an attempt to bash business rather than to actually recognise that government regulations were also at fault in what happened in the Gulf, and also that BP, as far as we can tell, has been making a pretty decent job at trying to clean up the mess, which obviously it shouldn't have allowed to happen in the first place. But, you know, no one can really characterise BP's behaviour since the spill began as unresponsive. I mean, they seem to have been doing everything they've been asked to do. And so to go through this sort of political showcase that we had this week, where this BP's just been beaten up by every politician who can do so, it seems to be a bit alarming in terms of what that says about the role of the rule of law in America.
Well, fair enough, but it seems as if BP's had a few PR snafus along the way as well. I mean, we had Carl Henrik Svanberg, BP's chairman, putting his own foot in his mouth after meeting with President Obama this week, talking about small people. Let's listen to that again.
He is frustrated because he cares about the small people, and we care about the small people. I hear comments sometimes that large oil companies are greedy companies or don't care, but that is not the case in BP.
What are small people, Sherwin Bryce Peace of the South African Broadcasting Corporation, and how does that kind of language go down with your listeners?
I personally didn't have a problem with his reference to small people. I think I understood exactly what he meant. He was talking about the people on the ground, the people who get their daily bread from shrimp fishing, from working the oceans, from their restaurants, not the people sitting in boardroom meetings or at the White House deliberating how to deal with this tragedy. So I really didn't think he misspoke, and he has subsequently apologized. I thought they were making a whole lot of noise about nothing. He was just making reference to the small little people out there who might perceive big corporations to be taking them for granted. And I think his message got lost in translation. I also think it's interesting how quickly the media in the United States are able to switch their focus entirely and forget about what they were doing just the day before. And I think Toyota, for example, certainly won't be complaining about this.
No.
It's a soap opera unfolding, really, with all the drama and twists that one would expect from brilliant script writers.
And Matthew Bishop, the big people seem strangely quiet over the mauling of BP. One thing noted in today's edition of The Economist is the silence of corporate America and its political allies. Why do you suppose that is?
Well, you know, when someone's firing a gun at one business leader, no other business leader wants to sort of put his head up above the trenches and say, come and fire at me instead. So I mean, I think that's the climate that business people feel is there in America. Now, obviously, BP is not the ideal crusade for those who worry about government beating up on big business, because BP has made a terrible error that is going to affect the lives of many, many people. But I think there has been already before this current sort of political exercise this week, been a lot of concern amongst business leaders that the government under Obama has been, you know, rather dismissive of business. I think we say in The Economist this week that Obama seems to regard business a bit like something unpleasant he finds on the sole of his trainers.
Well, Matthew, I wanted to throw one more thing to you. I mean, parts of the popular press, both here and in London, are stoking hostility between Britain and America. What do you make of that?
Well, I mean, I don't think it's going to fundamentally change the long-term special relationship that Britain and America have had, you know, which is based on common cultures and a deep historical relationship. I mean, certainly if we can get over the 1776 affair, I'm sure we can get over a bit of bashing over BP.
So a metaphorical firing squad, I guess, for BP executive Tony Hayward. Not so for Ronnie Lee Gardner at the center of one of the other top stories this week. Gardner was executed by firing squad last night in Utah for two murders in the 1980s. What do South Africans, Sherwin Bryce piece, make of the death penalty in America?
Well, they don't really talk much about the death penalty in the United States. I mean, this man was convicted of murdering someone in 1985, and I think in that sense it kind of loses its resonance. Of course, it's important to point out that South Africa abolished the death penalty in 1995 because it was really seen as a tool to suppress terrorists, what the apartheid government called terrorists, and who we now know are people like Nelson Mandela and Walter Sisulu. Nelson Mandela faced the death penalty at his treason trial in the 1960s, and so it really represents a great evil when we hear about the death penalty around the world. It's a symbol of hate. But having said that, there's a growing call for the return to the death penalty as a deterrent to the murders which have made the country one of the murder capitals of the world. But of course, we've not reached the point where it has become a national debate. There would have to be a referendum. That conversation hasn't reached, I think we're a little distracted with the World Cup now, the levels, the decibels it needs to for this really to be on the agenda firmly.
Well, sure, when you mentioned the World Cup, and before we go, I wanted to ask you what it's like being a South African and not being there right now. How's New York treating you?
Extremely, extremely disappointing. In fact, not so disappointing anymore, given the fact that South Africa lost their second match. So there's a bit of a graveyard after that, but certainly in the build-up and the opening match, I mean, people were sending me messages saying, really, this is the one time you can't tell me that you're in a better city or a better country than we are. This is the place to be. I think it was a unifying force. Continues to be, and above all, people get to see some really wonderful football, beyond the fact that it has bridged the divides between black and white. You have people from all different, from different backgrounds getting together to support their national team.
Sherwin Bryce Peace, UN correspondent for the South African Broadcasting Corporation, and Matthew Bishop, U.S. business editor for The Economist magazine and their New York bureau chief. Thank you both, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.